Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 189. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's software, hardware, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I'm here with my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Supercoop. It's going better now. I finally got a little bit of rest. Went up to FalseCon. Basically hung out with Russ the Beast Winner, Dan Fry from Tilts Health Nuts, and formerly of Mythcast was there as well. And we were hanging also with Nick, a.k.a. the Last Known God from many IRC channels. Yeah, and we hung with him at NELF.
Yeah, so, yeah, I remember Nick. Yeah, he's a cool guy, very cool guy.
Yes, a younger guy that actually gets it, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
And at least one of the conversations, we were talking about Mr. Robot, and Nick was like, what is this show you're talking about? And then he was like, well, it sounds like I'm going to have to watch it. And I tried to tell him, it's not going to be completely accurate, but it's going to be more accurate than anything you've seen in the world of drama kind of thing.
So you've also been watching Mr. Robot.
Yes, and this very last episode, and I don't care if it's a spoiler.
No. Shut your mouth. Don't spoil anything.
It's been almost a week.
No, it doesn't matter.
It does.
It matters to me because I wanted to talk about the show for a minute. That's actually what I wanted to bring
same
to the
here,
show.
Obviously.
Okay. Well, good for you. Great minds, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, first of all, was Russ doing okay?
Russ,
I know that guy works
so
long. Okay, good.
Yeah. There's no doubt. He's a very dedicated fellow. His job has changed a couple times at his new place, and he said he's utterly satisfied and happy with where he's at. He likes the type of work he's getting, the amount of work he's getting, and the amount of cooperation from all of his teammates. So he's definitely in a good mental spot for him, but I know he's also a very busy fellow.
Well, that's good to hear that he's in a good spot, because, yeah, I miss the dude. We need, for those of you who don't know Russ, previously known as, well, still known as a Techie Geek, a.k.a. the Beast.
Yeah.
And you can, all of his Techie Geek podcasts are on archive.org, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they are. And I will say his CPAP machine is quieter than anything in my house, and he was afraid it would be too loud.
Oh, wow. Yeah, who else had one when we went to Northwest?
Mitch Heyman.
No,
from
Northwest.
Geeksters had one. Oh, Northwest.
Oh, it's Chuck. Yeah, Chuck had one.
Yes.
Yeah, Chuck.
Yeah, I didn't hear that damn thing either.
Yeah, and I'm such a heavy sleeper, no pun intended, that it doesn't matter what's going on in the room. Once I'm ready, I'm done.
Yeah.
Have a concert. I don't care. I'm going to sleep. But yeah, okay, so good. But yeah, Mr. Robot. A few things I want to say about this show. First of all, it's...
Too much sex? Too much drugs?
No. It's really good on a number of levels. I mean, if you took away the tech aspect of it, it's a really good drama. But when you talk about pieces of fiction that have dealt with technology, more so centered around hacking culture, they've just got it so wrong every time, to the point where it's just laughable. It's embarrassing.
What do you mean? You've never been flying around a computer mainframe and seen a virus attack?
Right. Virtually in front of me. Yeah. Which is a great nod to a line from that show. But if you want to see tech done right and a good drama with a really compelling story and a good sense of humor, I would definitely recommend to check this show out. It's on the USA Network. I think it's also on cable. It's also really good.
And it's on your local BitTorrent server as well, I'm positive. And I'll say the casting, the actors in it, I think are doing a very credible job. I think they, for the most part, look the part, act the part, sound the part kind of thing.
Yes, and one of the best things about the show is that they've got a lot of the tech, and much like you alluded to, for the most part, very right. I would say highly accurate, even though there wasn't that much of a bar to be raised when it comes to this kind of thing. But several things I've seen on the show, the use of Linux, more importantly, Kali, and talks about different desktop environments. And I'm not talking about like a camera's panning and I see a desktop in the background going, that thing's running Ubuntu. Nothing like that. No. Actual characters dropping to the command line, putting in real commands that for things that you would be doing based on the story. seen someone reboot a phone and go into get super user access on an Android device and then copy the contents onto an SD card. All sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah, so, seen Raspberry Pi utilization.
Raspberry Pi utilized very well, as a matter of fact.
Seen a very good social engineering attack by a guy on a street corner with a audio, quote-unquote, disc.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Also, saw him back up his files, and I can't remember what it's called. It looks like an audio CD, but it's not. It's a encrypted volume to store his secrets. We've seen DDoS attacks.
Yep.
Basically, one of the things I read, and I truly believe that this is true, the writers purposefully, actually the technical advisors, purposefully every episode do at least one thing inaccurate just to make sure that the trolls have something to talk about.
Yeah, I've on top of watching the show, I've also been listening to podcasts talking about the show every episode, listened to a lot of interviews with the creator and with the cast, and the level of technical accuracy in this is very high. They went to the right people, and they even have some on set to where they can go to them in the middle of filming and say, and get context for some of the lines, because the actors don't know what the hell they're saying or what's going on. So they are there not only to make sure that the writing is correct and it fits within the story correctly based on how you could or would do these things, but they're also there to give context and to let the actors know exactly why they would be saying or doing these things and what's being done. Very, very cool. But yeah, a fantastic show. I saw the teaser. It's like the first 6 minutes of the first episode, which is free on YouTube. You watch that, yeah. And you'll...
The entire pilot first episode is free on YouTube.
Yeah, and they also streamed it on Twitch for a short period of time. But yeah, so I would... I mean, because that's not going to cost you anything. But I guarantee you, after the first 5 or 7 minutes, you'll probably want to keep watching more. But yeah, I blasted through the pilot. And then thanks to Google Rewards, I had about $12 or $13 worth of credits saved up. So I just bought the first 3 or 4 episodes thinking, oh, this will last me a while. No, I blasted through those in a day, bought the other 5, and the finale's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes,
but to use as family-safe words as possible, they popped the balloon. I don't know what they're going to do next season, even though before the first episode even aired, they got signed up for season 2.
Yes.
So I don't know. It wouldn't shock me, to be honest, if this is like a true detective, and I can't remember other shows. The horror show my wife likes, like every season.
Oh, American Horror Story.
Right. Maybe every season they're going to reboot it with a different plot or something, because I don't see how they're going to go much further into this plot.
What it was, and I don't want to get off on too far off topic here, but no, it was originally going to be a screenplay, but the writer got through the first 90 or 100 pages and realized I'm not even halfway in the story yet. So no, there is a definitive end planned. It will be 3 seasons and then it's done, staying with the same characters.
Yeah, see, I don't know where they're going to take it, because they've, to me, mentally, from what I see, completed so much of the story already.
Oh, no, you just wait until this last episode, man. I'm sure some new wrench is going to be thrown into the mix.
Yes, I did say this before episode 9, and episode 9 made me say, well, that's a different stuff going on. So
yeah, but yeah, we should record a special episode or something and really talk about this more in depth. But yeah, Mr. Robot, at least go check out the pilot on YouTube. And I'm sure that if you're any sort of tech savvy or tech, here's another great use for the show too. Right, I showed this to my wife, who never listens to me on anything because I'm me and she's her. But I had her watch the first episode, right? And her immediate reaction to that was, how do I do that two-step thing?
Yeah.
So if you're wanting to scare people into getting more password conscious of being safe with their online profiles and, you know, just using technology in general, this is a great show for them to watch. They don't need to watch the whole thing. Watching the pilot will get people either just interested based on I really should be being more secure in how I operate my machines, or just scared to the point where they're going to do it. Either way.
Yes, I did make my wife watch the first episode, but she didn't watch it with me because she's always upstairs watching TV while I'm podcasting. And I just asked her after the first episode, so how about yours? She said, what? I said, how about yours? She said, what? I said, how about your password? maybe, you know, it's time to, I don't know, maybe change it, considering somebody could get it in, like, you know, 35 seconds. Mm-hmm. And she was like, it's just a drama. Oh, crap. Okay. It didn't work. I was hoping that would work, but it didn't work. I will say I am proud that I've been able to at least spot some of the technical inaccuracies. Makes me feel a little bit better. Look at this, as the old church lady would say on Saturday Night Live, just a little bit superior to the... but I will say, if you are at all sensitive, don't watch this show, because it is a definitely adult show.
Yes.
It might be broadcast on USA, but it's definitely being, in my opinion, recorded for Netflix or for DVD type viewing, because they are bleeping cuss words in the show. Like they're planning on releasing it with those cuss words in there. There's definitely a great deal of adult situations, and there's definitely plenty of things that will also make let's just say very sensitive people that I would picture maybe being Republicans in the South that might see a scene or two and like basically turn their TV off and swear to never watch it again.
Right. Yeah, there's such good, also just social commentary. Dude, I could go on forever. We gotta move on. But just here, I'll put out a dare. I'm daring our audience. I've never done that. I dare you to go watch the pilot, and then afterward, or if you've already seen it, either way, if you watch several episodes of the show, just one or just a teaser, whatever, hit me up on Google Plus, just Cody Cooper, and let me know what you thought of it. Because now the door mentions it, yeah, I can think back to a couple of times where when I was thinking of technical stuff, I was like, that wouldn't work like that. Or it was something where I was like, but if you took this into consideration, that wouldn't matter. So something like that. Yeah, I can't remember. But I'm going to go through and watch them all again, because they're that damn good.
Well, I'll just say with the last episode, they said they would delete the key after in crypting. And from everything I gathered about the type of in a encryption, you wouldn't delete the key afterwards, because it wouldn't matter, because that would be the key to encrypt, not the key to decrypt. So you wouldn't care. So deleting
something
the key,
after the fact, was pointless to mention or take into consideration.
Right. But if you are offended by it, don't contact me about it, because I don't care. Because we all have freedoms in this country, and one of your freedoms is to A, not write us and complain about it being unethical or immoral, but you also have the freedom to not watch it. So.
Well, I'm going to correct you there, Dora. I would say that if you are offended or if you have a comment, mail steve@smdcomputers.net.
Exactly. He will answer every one of your questions.
You're damn right. Since 2007.
Exactly. Now, I want to start the show by first off saying thinkpenguin.com. Easy answer for free and open hardware, for free and open software. Go check them out. If you see something you like, ping me. I will send you a coupon code. Also, I want to just mention the Linux for the Rest of Us Club. I've gotten more than a couple emails asking about videos and stuff to do, so I want to thank you guys. I have that now written down, so it's now just a question of when I will do it, but I have it written down, basically sitting right in front of me.
And to give that just a little more context, we've been asking people for ideas on what you would like to see in video tutorials or just videos from Dor or myself, and we've gotten some really good recommendations and suggestions, so thank you to those who have written in. And if you haven't yet, or if you have a good idea, just send us an email and we'll give you that address at the end of the show.
Yes, but I also wanted to mention about the club itself. If you go to podnuts.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club, you can join the club. But I'm telling you right now, I'm going to move where the quote-unquote club is being hosted at, which is the newsletter service, in air quotes, called Git Response. I'll say this, GitResponse, they don't even acknowledge they do customer service. When you click on their chat window after you're paying for an account and you're logged in and you click on chat, it says customer success agent, because they can't even say customer service because they don't understand how to do customer service. I asked them for an assistance with migrating two accounts, which I'm not going to say is my fault, because it's not my fault. We started the AAA club. Steve started that one. Steve was paying with it with his account. I didn't want him to do that, so I started my own account for this show's newsletter. Steve wanted to hand over that account to me. Why am I going to pay twice as much? And I asked them to migrate both the accounts, both to all of the contacts, all of the newsletters, and all the forms into one account, to which they basically told me repetitively in chat and now in email, 3 times total, no, they will not do that. They said, if you want to do that, you can migrate the contacts. So I'm not going to be able to migrate everything over. And they won't migrate anything over. I thought I was paying for a service, but apparently I'm paying for the freedom to do the work myself. So I'm going to change off of them as quick as possible. And I would encourage anybody, if you're looking for a newsletter service, do not go to GetResponse. Use MailChimp or somebody else, but do not use GetResponse, because your response when you ask them something will be no.
That's crazy. That just...
Well, obviously, I'll say, when I was in the chat, I wasn't dealing with a GetResponse employee. I was dealing with somebody that they subcontracted out that wasn't able to tell me anything.
Well, either way, they're making a mistake by not taking care of you, or putting someone that doesn't know how to exercise their business model to a point where they would keep you as a customer.
Well, and I'll say, I'm probably not one of their preferred customers, because I don't spam my newsletters. I don't use all the analytics. I don't do the AB. I don't sit, you know, I don't do the disgusting looking, as I put it, emails with all the pictures and the animations and the embedded videos. I just do simple text. So I'm probably not something they call high valued customer. And I think that's very obvious in the way that they treated me. So,
yeah, well, just goes to show you, you treat your customers good and they stay your customers. You don't, the first thing to think about is, so where am I going now?
Yeah, I will say Martin Rambo Bando talked to me about a service that was very affordable that would just do sending of emails. So I'm going to ask him, I'm going to talk to him about that, see if I can use that for the newsletter. If not, I'll just look at someplace like MailChimp or someplace else, because they all basically charge the same amount of money. My guess is the difference is going to be the amount of customer service and the software interface quality. So I'll find
out. There's MailChimp or Constant Contact is another good one from what I hear.
Yeah. And moving from one fail to another fail, I found this week, and I was a little excited. Piecast.org, one of their most recent blog post is called Coming Soon. Oh, Piecast.org, Coming Soon.
That sounds promising.
It sounds great. And it says, if you've stumbled here in some way, we are not quite ready yet. We are working on putting together the first few shows and hope to have more to say soon. Feel free to subscribe to the RSS and or our Twitter feed and find out when things that are ready. I'm like, dude, that's pretty awesome.
So when can I download the first episode?
Well, as it turns out, this was actually posted on December 16th, 2012.
Wow, that's a ways back. So by now they must have, you know, a couple hundred episodes in the can, right?
No, it looks like they never published a single episode.
So they're squatting on the domain and doing nothing with it.
And I'm going to bet any amount of money, if I ask them what are they doing with the domain, they'll either swear we're going to use it, or you can have it for $20,000 or something else. Right. So that's a big fail, and I encourage people, don't get that confused with going from fail to success. And it is thepiepodcast.com, and that is pie, P-I, not P-I-E, thepiepodcast.com. This one just launched maybe 5 days ago. The Pi Podcast number one Ubuntu mate. I will say this is a more credible Raspberry Pi podcast than I would expect, because one of them is an actual developer. If I heard everything right, one of them is an actual Raspberry Pi developer. One of them is somebody who's connected with the project itself. So that is very tight, I would say, people on the Raspberry Pi itself. Now, unfortunately, it's only going to be about the Raspberry Pi and no other Pis or no other single board computers, but it's better than nothing. This is still the first Raspberry Pi or small or single board computing podcast I have found on the internet. So it had to start someplace. I don't care if they beat me. I wish them nothing but all the best, and I hope their podcast only gets more listeners, higher quality, better content as time and time goes on. And to me, they're off to a very good start. They have Martin Winpress, somebody who was deemed it not important enough to come on our show. He said he couldn't be bothered with staying up late, even though we have people on Android App Addicts who stay up till 3, 4, and 6 in the morning to record a show. But apparently we're not important enough for him, but other shows like this are, because this is, of course, recorded in the UK. So I'm sure it was much closer to his nap time.
Interesting. Yeah, I have yet to listen to it, but yeah, anybody putting out content that's going to bring, on one hand, awareness of alternative things you can do with these devices, but more importantly, just the options for these single board computers are limitless. I mean, they really, really are. Every day it seems that now, you know, you're getting news articles and how-to guides on, hey, I did this with a Raspberry Pi, or I did this with a Banana Pi, or I did this with a BeagleBone Black. And it's just so cool to be, to have these devices on hand and think, oh, wow, you've done all the work for me. I'm just going to download this image file and throw it on an SD card and give this a try for that purpose. It's a really, really cool time. And to have, and I would say that when I get into, quote unquote, a new interest, whether it be, you know, tech, or like I was saying, when I was first started listening to Mr. Robot, I was really all about seeing if any podcasts had covered the content. I found a really good podcast that does kind of a wrap-up after every episode. Or, you know, I've listened to a podcast about comic books, but it's just one more avenue of information that I sort of, you know, soak into in order to get a lot of information about whatever the new interest in my life is. And yeah, it's been a long time coming for a good show to come out and tackle this huge topic in a good way. And it sounds like from the reviews I've read and from what you're telling me that they're doing a bang up job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, you said the options are limitless, and that's very true. The options are limitless on most of the single board computers. The difference is the Raspberry Pi, not only is the options limitless, but the documentation, community support, and community development seems near limitless as well, because everybody seems to be doing something. And I have an example here from IT eBooks. I believe this is by Packet Publishing, the same publisher I brought 2 weeks ago with the Banana Pi book. This one's called the Raspberry Pi Projects for Kids Second Edition. They do, of course, have the first edition as well. This is the kind of thing I think that I'm really, really wanting to get for my oldest son, and then just ask him to look through it, and is there anything that piques your interest? And then see if me and him can sit down and do it. If soldering is involved, I will say I do worry about it.
No, that's great. I have a project I'm going to embark on soon that will require a soldering iron, and I've never used one, period. But I would say that seems to be a hurdle for a lot of people, because they're just, when it comes to tech across the board, some of the hardest hurdles to overcome, I should say, are the fear of messing up. And when you're talking about connecting, you know, different, actually permanently soldering on wires to a board to make connections to create new processes, yeah, that can seem a bit daunting. But I'm sure that once you do it, after a while, you do the proper research beforehand, it's going to be just like anything else you would do. So yeah, I'm actually repairing some gaming controllers, and then one of the things for those of you video, you can see this GameCube WaveBird controller, which I restored. It had a bunch of soda dumped in it, but I was able to order the specialized tri-wing screwdriver, which I have around here somewhere. Oh yeah, right here, this tiny little sucker right here. Boom, right there. Yeah, take it apart, fix it. But one of the things I have to do with soldering is that when you're talking about NES and SNES cartridges, the batteries inside of them wearing out over time, because they're just, you know, like the standard like CR 2032 watch batteries, which is the memory for save files, because they didn't have memory cards or hard drives, you know, back in the day. But you actually have to not only just attach a new battery, but also give power to it, because the contacts, once you pull out the old battery, they're dead. So yeah, you need to solder some new contacts on, depending on the construction of the board and the cartridge. And yeah, to me, when I first saw that, I was just like, you know, just like, oh, can I do this? And I found step-by-step instructions. I thought, well, you know, I spend, you know, $20-$30 on a halfway decent, you know, soldering iron, you know, get some solder, get some cheap cabling, and just worst case scenario, I fail and learn from it.
You know, or you lose part of your finger. Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, yeah. Remember, those things get hot. So don't be mossed from the IT crowd and turn it on when you thought you were turning it off and then burn down your desk.
Yeah, and when you set it down, make sure you set it down with the tip not touching anything.
Yes, so turn it off, and I just walk away.
Yeah. Don't
do that.
And now that this next link I'm going to say, Cody, has definitely stirred a lot of opinions. I will say that, number one. Number two, every write-up on every website about anything is going to be biased one way or another, okay?
Period. I cannot wait to get into this. Even, yes, by all means, right, let's do it.
Even if the bias is it's trying to be unbiased, guess what? That's a bias. Everything is a bias, okay? At least this article made it very clear from the headline what they thought of it, and it's called Mozilla Says Bye-Bye to Firefox Add-ons in Favor of Chrome Extensions. Why this is a good move. This is over at techtimes.com. I will say I went literally back and forth more than a couple times about what's the right move, why is the right move, how's the right move, why would they do this, how could they do this, why they want to do this. And I'm going to say I'm ending up on Mozilla thought, this is what I'm guessing, and this is what it sounds like. Mozilla thought it's better for everybody if there's one standard, and by everybody I mean less security exploits if there's one standard language, less developer work because it's one standard language, more ubiquity between the browsers if it's one standard plugin, and you know, it would just be something else that they would have to take on their shoulders by themselves. So they decided to get rid of their plugin architecture, their add-in architecture, their format, and adopt what is basically the Chromium standard on plugin framework. Now, it's not the exact same plugin. You cannot take a Chrome plugin and put it into Firefox and have it work, but it's the same basic format. There's very minimal front-end, as they kept saying, tweaking to get it to work in Firefox, which means in the future, every plugin you see on Chrome, you should also be able to get on Firefox easily. But a lot of people screaming up and down how this is stupid, this is evil, what's the point now of having Firefox around if it's just going to emulate Chrome? Kind of, dare I say, very short-sighted malarkey. To me, the bottom line is Mozilla will always be more open than Chrome. Mozilla has a different Flash engine. Mozilla has a different JavaScript engine. Mozilla can be downloaded and completely rebranded with no worries and be the equivalent browser to Firefox. With Chrome, you can only base your version off of Chromium. So to me, there's a big difference there, but that's just my opinion.
I had a good discussion with a friend of mine, and he sort of brought me a couple articles and then, well, sent them to me with the question, can you believe this is happening? And I responded to him, yes, I can. And he's a staunch follower of a particular technology company, I'll say that, and was questioning why this would be beneficial. I laid out a lot of the points you did, but also I sort of threw the potential scenario to him. I said, what if tomorrow, let's just say for the sake of argument, that Apple, with their infinite wisdom, decided that they would now run Android apps exclusively, and that over a short period of time, all of the current apps on their iTunes App Store would be converted over to the Android versions, and then that would be the standard moving forward. I said, what would that do? And he didn't really have a good answer. And I said, forget the jumping ship and being hurt as a consumer and this and that, but think about it this way. If there's a security flaw or a bug with a developer that had the application on both platforms, You cannot tell me that that app, that that developer would patch the version that had the larger user base and or download count first, because that's just good business. That's taking care of the lion's share first and then moving on to the second one. That's just a logical decision that anybody would be making, period. Whether to say that there would be a 24-hour difference in getting it patched versus a 30 or 60-day difference, it doesn't matter. That's what's going to happen. But by having somewhat of an industry standard, I can understand the fear of, now it's all going to be done in this and danger of a monopoly. No. Just consider the fact that it's not that Mozilla's conceding, going, yeah, our Firefox extensions are awful, we might as well just go with the Chrome standard. It's them realizing that this move is going... I guess a better way to articulate my point with that is they wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for a good business decision for Mozilla or a good move for their customers and their users moving forward. You need to trust that, period.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say, I honestly believe it's one of those things. Mozilla is as big as they're probably going to get. And that right there insults a lot of people. I don't know if Mozilla can get much bigger.
I would argue that. I would say for them to get much bigger, they would have to do something that we may not be considering right now and moving into different markets to do other things.
Well, and I think being as open as they are with all their source code, it's going to be really difficult for them to get bigger. I'll say that. And I think it was one of those things. They're basically, I think, trying to protect their position. They don't want to lose anything. And if they have their own standard going forward, there's a likelihood Chrome might get more and more popular, and then thus Firefox will have less and less extensions. And if they don't have the extension you want in that browser, and you know about it, and you want it, you will probably change browsers. It's now becoming one of the most easiest things to do on people's desktops is change what browser that you're using.
Right. Yeah, because you're exactly right. There's no... Oh, I got to uninstall this and install this, and the user interface is completely different. How am I going to get used to it? I'm so used to using the other thing. No, not at all. Not at all. And here's the thing, too. If I'm a developer and I have a really, really popular Firefox extension that I, for whatever reason, don't have available on Chrome, and this goes forward, let's say, over the next 30, 60 days, am I not going to, in order to retain the downloads and the revenue that I have, immediately start working on a Chrome version? You bet your butt I am. Yeah. So I would say that a lot of it comes down to fear of change and uncertainty and, oh, but there's this one extension I use all the time and I just don't know if it's going to be available. It will in time, if not immediately preceding what's about to happen. Or who knows, the one, and you know, I It's like, so some people will be using one tool and go, no, this is what I've always used. This is who so I need. This is great. But what if there's something out there that's better that you just don't know about? I understand you've used it for years or it's just comfortable to you. Great. But just because you have this is classic legacy thinking. Just because you've been doing something one way your whole life doesn't mean that it's the right way or the best way. And I mean best as in output or best for you as the user. It doesn't mean anything. All it means is that you're closed off and you're not receptive to change. And that's your problem. And you're the only one to lose out from it. So right. Cut it out.
Absolutely agree. Okay, what I have next here, Cody, this is the kind of thing that just makes me really almost crazy giddy, but it did take me a couple seconds to fully get everything that this was doing. Okay, it's called a Witty board, I believe I'm pronouncing it right.
I saw this a week ago. Yeah, this... Oh, great. I'm so glad you brought this.
Oh, yeah. This is a WITI board. The only way I can explain this is the ultimate hacker solution board is what I'm going to call it. There's a link here on mqmaker.com. That's the people who make the device itself. And they have a posting on how to make your own NAS with Witty board. Okay. What the Witty board is, they actually did an Indiegogo, I believe. And I think you can actually buy it right now for $69. So that's not crazy expensive. Okay.
No, not at all.
It's, to me, virtually fair price is what I'm going to say. Okay, it's a board, no case. Okay, what it comes with is a, I'm not sure what kind of processor this is. It says MT7621A dual core, 880 megahertz with 4 possibles of threads. I don't know about the processor, but what I do know is you can get up to 512 megabytes of RAM, 2.4 gigahertz wireless antenna docks, the common port, 2.5 gigahertz Wi-Fi sockets, 2 WAN ports of a gigabyte each. That makes you, that means you can have failover or you can bond 2 different upstream ports, 2 SATA 3 connectors, 1 USB 3.0 connector, 1 micro SD connector, 1 RC battery for storage application, 30 expansion ports using USB I2S JTAG UART GPIO, 16 megabytes of flash, that's on the board for some firmware kind of thing, debugging port, a RF antenna connector, I believe 4 of them. This is the board that can be a router, a mini server, a NAS, all in one, basically, kind of thing. This is a super functional board, is the way I'm going to put it. $69 sounds like an utter steal to me. And they have a step-by-step-by-step on their website on how to make it into a NAS. They give you all the step-by-step commands to run, the distribution to download of OpenWrt to get this thing up and running. This thing is a little single board computer, SBC, of, dare I say, sexiness. This is a really, really nice looking device. And they do have some measurement reports on throughput, output, and power assumption, how to create RAID arrays kind of thing. This to me looks like a really crazy powerful device. This is the dream device if you want to make yourself a professional grade consumer priced firewall for a small office, home office, or even a small enterprise. This is just really cool.
Yeah, so many different purposes for this board. And yeah, you know, when I was reading over, I don't believe it was this article, but it was another like article introducing the product, and then had, I believe, 2 to 3 potential uses for it, including, you know, tutorials on how to take advantage of the board. And I just thought, that's so damn cool. Yeah, I'm not at the point where I can really pick one up right now, but I have so many other half done projects I'm trying to bang out and get off my list. But yeah, and when you talk about like if I had one in my hands today, it'd be a toss up versus me trying to create a NAS, much like what this particular article is showing me how to do, versus making a homemade router. Because, man, with custom antennas, and when you're talking about, you know, custom firmware, there's just so much stuff you can do. And it's one of those things that you kind of ruins you forever. Like, once you do that, like, you'll never run stock again, you know? But yeah, definitely looking forward to getting one of these down the road and playing with it, because I cannot wait to test out the possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And the banana pie people, they have a banana router. I believe it is a little bit more, it might have more software you might be able to put on it. But this one has, to me, it looks like at least the muscle power in the ports and the connectors to other things. So I'm going to have to keep my eye on it. I already have my Banana Pi as my own cloud server, which I'm so terrified to speak highly about it, but I am getting, in my humble opinion, bang for the buck, phenomenal speed and performance out of it. I haven't had to touch it. It's just been working, and it just works like a champ. So I'm super happy with that. So I really don't need a quote-unquote NAS. I just hook up an external laptop drive. It's 500 gigs. I'm using it as my own personal Dropbox is the best way to put it, not as a NAS storage device, because I really don't think I need a NAS storage device. I just need a personal Dropbox that I can own.
I agree to a certain extent. I'm just going to leave it at that, because if I go to speculate anymore, we're going to be here until 2 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, good link, good piece of tech. Definitely check it out in the show notes.
Okay, there's also, I'm going to have this other book in the links. I don't know how long this is going to be up, but it has been, it's been up for at least a couple of days. Lennox Utility Cookbook, a $26.99 value, free for a limited time. Again, Packet Publishing. This is the third Packet Publishing thing I brought to this show in less than a month, and they are not paying me money. These guys are really, in my humble opinion, on a rampage to try to get credibility, users, and give away stuff whenever possible. So this is really good. And this did come from a listener who I cannot remember, and I'm really embarrassed because it was a long-time listener. So thank you, long-time
listener.
Wait a minute.
Are they? Oh, never mind. Okay. I was like, I'm filling out the form now, and I was like, they're not going to mail me a physical book, right? But no, it's an ebook. But regardless, Packt Publishing, it's PACKT. And I've seen plenty of these books at the bookstore. Yes, those do still exist, by the way, just in case you forgot.
Well, then real quick, no, they're not going to email you a physical book, but this is from TradePub, which means do not use your normal email account.
So let me get this straight. I'm supposed to not use my normal email account.
You can, but then you'll be really mad. Because The last time I did anything TradePub, I got kind of swamped with bacon, quote-unquote, emails. And I say that, and I love bacon, and I did not love those emails.
Got it. Okay. And I'm going to use an old company name that I was somewhat associated with earlier, many years ago. Yeah, we
Ashley
have
Madison. Less than...
Oh, man. How much time do you have right now?
Man, I just think it's funny. I just think it's funny that any guy believes they can go to a website and have anything close to attractive or whatever contact them. I think P.T. Barnum once said something to the effect of suckers born every minute.
Let me just say that. Let me just say this. If you're creating an account at Ashley Madison, you're using your real name, your real credit card, your real email address, and giving them real contact information, then that's your fault.
Well, A, yes. B, what makes you think you have to go there? I mean, you can't just walk down to like a local bar or pub and just...
Well, we have to take a suspension of disbelief and say, okay, I'm enough of a scumbag and or... socially inept person to not be able to, or just flat out curious, to not be able to go and find someone to have an affair with on my own in real life, or IRL/AFK, Mr. Robot reference. But yeah, like my wife, this is to her credit and to mine, she goes, would you ever do something like that? I said, if I did, I would get prepaid credit cards and make email addresses and register them under secure connections that could never be tracked back to me, and you'd never know. She goes, yeah, I thought something like that, but first of all, I'm very happy with you, so no. But I told her systematically how I would do it. To her, if something like this happens, it's just like, okay, well, I guess I'm cutting ties from all those accounts, never logging into them again from anywhere, and I'm safe. But yeah. As kind of a side tangent of this, I loved John McAfee's analysis of this, which got posted today, I believe. Him basically, some information came into his hands to where basically he's accusing it of being an inside job.
Wouldn't shock me.
No, but when you think of someone who's doing investigative research and someone to be someone whose opinion to be trusted, you probably wouldn't go to John McAfee first.
Not first, not second, not third, not 85th.
No, not at all. 85,000. But what I will say in akin to that, I bet that Charlie Sheen has some really good life stories that you can learn something from, yeah, and has some good insight on the business of Hollywood. Yet, you wouldn't probably go to him for that, because based on the fact that he's out of his mind crazy. Mm-hmm. But the same goes for McAfee. And if you haven't seen that video of him doing that, it was like a, I can't remember if it was a music video. Have you seen the video of him? Oh my God.
With the drugs.
Yeah. The drugs, yeah. The, he was, the hookers, everything.
he was complaining about now Intel still using the McAfee name and how to uninstall it from your computer.
Right. But no, that's just a fantastic video. And like I said, I'm gonna dip my toe out of that rabbit hole because I could talk about it forever. But
I just laugh at anybody. I mean, who would ever consider doing anything like that? I'm the most socially inept person. And if you don't believe me, just meet me at a conference and I think you'll see. I wouldn't even do this. I wouldn't even sign up for that kind of service. I would think about it for 3 seconds. Then I would just sit on my couch by myself with a bag of Doritos.
I have a friend of mine, a coworker, a female coworker from years ago, who was not only trying to meet someone through your normal dating sites, you know, Plenty of Fish and what's the big one? Oh my God, I don't even know.
eHarmony, Match.
Yeah, all that crap. Yeah. But she had to resort to making a profile on Ashley Madison I shouldn't say resort to, but she did all of this and then finally said, well, I'll try that here. And then she ended up getting what she wanted from that site, but informing herself on what she actually wanted in a person. So I could see a bunch of scenarios, but yeah, like me, no, I just couldn't see myself doing it because from me being me, being very kind of awkward and picked on, bullied when I was a kid, and overcoming that in my early 20s through, you know, doing stand-up and not being afraid to tell anybody anything, regardless if they're standing in front of me or not. I just have no fear when it comes to that stuff. But more importantly, I'm happy in the relationship I'm in. But I could see how being outside of the user base, you might look at a market or a product and go, who the hell would use this? But there's a lot of people who would use that. Wow.
There's a lot of people that think goats are sexy, too. I don't claim they're sane.
You leave Josh out of this.
I know.
Okay.
Okay. The next link I want to bring up, if anyone has ever heard of Slack, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't heard of Slack, it is really hard to describe what it is. What it is basically an online service you and a team of people sign up for, and then you basically have almost a community ecosystem where you can share files, pictures, links, text. You can have chats with some of the people, all the people. You can post yourself note. You can do some amount of scheduling, and you can
Think of it like a privatized social network with file sharing and meeting capabilities.
Yeah, very private. Yes. Social network, except it's actually not. Because it's hosted on their website, which means you control nothing. They control everything. They control your fate, if you will. And I am one of the guys who, partially, it's a little bit of paranoia about having information up on sites I don't have any control over. But it's also the fact that it doesn't look to me like some of these type of sites have a good business model. So it's the kind of thing where if you get into it and you like it, you never know when it's going to disappear. Could be next week, could be next month, could be 10 years from now. But the only truth is it will sooner or later disappear, and then you're left out in the lurch. Well, step on the stage, Mattermost, Mattermost. Mattermost looked at Slack, kind of liked what they saw, but they didn't like the fact that it was proprietary, basically closed-sourced software. So they decided to basically make their own version of it, completely open, completely installable and downloadable. I will say you will have to use the HTML interface for everything, but you can download the complete package at mattermost.org/downloads. I am really, really tempted to install this on a VPN for a month and see what kind of stuff I can do with it, how it can work. Can it help with teamwork and stuff? And I will say, I think it's almost hysterical. Every screenshot I'm seeing of the app on their own website is of Steve Jobs giving commencement speech at a college. The king of closed source, if you will.
Yep. Speaking of Steve Jobs, also a very good point of him made in one of the earlier episodes of Mr. Robot.
Oh, yes, but of course it just turned out to be a delusion and he didn't actually say it out loud.
Yeah, but man, that one rant in particular, man, if that was a ship, I would have been on board.
Yes. I will say what I'm really hoping to find with this Mattermost ecosystem, if you will, is a, right on the site, they have a Docker setup. Okay. Ubuntu apt-get update, apt-get install wget, wget URL, blah, blah, sudo user mod, sudo service start. Bam. That looks really easy. Okay. Looks like I might have a thing that I can try here. I'm trying to think of where I can run it. But this, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because this to me is the trifecta, if you will. This is the point of everything. You need to either have a Docker instance, a virtual instance, or a pre-made ISO for it to really get mass a adoption, while Docker is still not the norm, what everyone knows how to do. At least it's a start, so that's good. Good, 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 good.
Yeah, and if you've never considered using any of these sort of collaboration tools, I would recommend trying a few of them. Several of them have free trials. There are some that are open source that are free. Some that seem really fully featured, but it can be expensive. But if you're working in a group that needs to communicate and or share files, a number of different things, definitely give them a try. Because whatever system you have right now, you're like, this is okay, it does a job. Chances are the people who made that software took all of that into consideration and made a product that's going to make your workflow even better.
Yes, and email is not the answer. Email sucks, just saying. Okay, next link here. I literally bookmarked this only because of the headline, which when I clicked the link, the headline said something different. Okay, the headline I clicked said 23 open source women to follow on Twitter. And I will say, I keep trying to get back into Twitter. So I would much rather follow open source developers, open source contributors, or anything in that arena. Then when I click the link, it's the hashtag I look like an engineer thing, which I'm the anti-millennial. Sorry, millennials. I'm the anti-hipster. I'm not sorry, hipsters. Anything hashtag, as far as I'm concerned, I wish there was a way I could just have a predefined filter that wouldn't let anything like that into my network. Hashtag anything.
Because, you just don't get it, Dad.
Yeah, I don't, and I'm happy I don't. But here's the bottom line. We all need to make sure we once in a while expand our personal bubble. Because all social networks and all Google search results tend to have a tendency to give us positive reinforcement on what we already do. I think part of the problem with women in technology is breaking through to new people who know about them, know about smart ones. Because like the perfect, for instance, I'll say is Russ Winter got his job because of his podcast.
Yep.
If you're following somebody on Twitter who seems really smart and then it turns out they're 60 miles from you and they say they need a job, well, maybe they'll be a good fit for your job.
Yeah, and you're a hiring manager at your company. I wonder what's going to happen.
Right, exactly. And to be honest, there is a little bit of satisfaction that would come if I turn to my boss and say, I have a good person for this job, and it is a woman as well, and it's a technical job, because we have a lot of diversity at my job. I think we have higher diversity than most places. I have no problem saying that. We have all types of people, including people who like to cover their cube in tinfoil. I'm just saying, we have all kinds of people. But there's nothing wrong with sticking with that diversity and making sure that it stays like that. So it is a good link over at Open Source, which is the Red Hat powered sponsored site. But it is a good list of Twitter people to follow.
Yeah, and I would say I'm trying to get more active in Twitter, but really I'm, because with Twitter, in my opinion, either you are a creator or a consumer of content, and either one, that's fine. Don't feel just because you have a Twitter account, you need to get on there and just tweet stuff out. That's not first of all, that's not going to keep your followers or you know, suit whatever potential followers that you're trying to gain just by, I'm just going to throw stuff out there. No, it needs to have a point and a purpose. But if you have a Twitter account and you're just following people on there, just kind of get, even if you're brand new to it, you have no concept, just start following. Like, I follow some authors I like, some tech sites, some tech journalists, some celebrities. And if I see something in my feed that's, you know, just like any social media, if you see something keep continuing to pop up, you're like, I'm not reading any of this garbage. Just get rid of them. But more so, use it. Like, I'm, for the longest time, embarrassingly is enough, but I can be honest with you guys, you're not going to tell anybody, it's just me and you, right? By ridiculous, habitual, just foolishness, every day, I was going to yahoo.com to check news. Like, it was just stupid. Like, from way back in the 90s, I was just like, oh, I'm going to check Yahoo, what's going on with this? Whereas now, I'm utilizing Twitter more, I'm utilizing more Reddit, for anything really like, I don't know, like breaking news or maybe something political that I just want to get caught up on. I might go to CNN or I might go to USA Today. Actually, I can't, never mind. I cannot remember the last time I went to USAtoday.com or read their awful paper. But I don't know where I was going with this.
I don't know. But okay. I will say the one that I definitely liked the most was...
Oh, Twitter. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Alex DeWolf, I don't know, DeWolf maybe, at Rocket Ship Mom on Twitter, and it is hashtag I look like a engineer because I write Python code for NASA missions ... while holding a baby.
Awesome.
Yeah, that is, because when I hold a baby, I can barely change the channel on the television, so... Touche.
And as much resistance as something like this might get, you just, first of all, stop being a jerk. Secondly, I mean, I don't have a daughter yet, but I have sisters and I have a wife, and just knowing that they have, I mean, obviously these women in tech were always, you know, role models to a certain extent, but now that they're having their voices heard more often and getting themselves out there, they're showing a good... they are the example of what you can accomplish, and it's not just I'm a single 20-something. For instance, like that one you just brought up, I'm a mother. And yeah, I have to code with one hand with a baby on my hip. That's just dedication.
Right, and I will say Liz Quilty, I believe is how it's pronounced, is on this list as well. She is somebody I've been following on Google+ for a hell of a long time. She is obviously, I'll just say, one of the smarter people I follow on Google+. So yeah, this is just a chock full list of just good people. You need to check it out. And it's at opensource.com, which I think is a good site.
I will definitely check it out.
Okay, a couple more quickies. The first one is actually bringing me back to the day of Linux basics. This was a technology I brought up a really, really long time ago, and it's Yacy, I'm going to guess it's pronounced Yacy. What this is trying to be is a non-centralized distributed search engine. Okay, what it really needs is it needs like me and Cody and Martin and other people to have it turned on and activated, and then basically when you go to websites, it gets higher ranking. That's one way it gets higher status in the search engine. But also you can add sites. You can specifically say, I want to add this site for when someone's looking for this. Okay. So it's not controlled by a company. It's not controlled by ad sponsorship. It's distributed, which means it lives on all of our networks. I believe this is P2P. So there is no middleman server that's involved. So this can live as long as the users exist. But they have a Raspberry Pi version, okay? I did just some light reading on it. I didn't try it yet. This started out, I believe, as a Indiegogo or Kickstarter campaign to do this. And this came from another longtime listener. And again, I'm sorry, I can't remember who it is. I'm Tom Harwood at re remembering this. But here's what I like about it. You install it on your Raspberry Pi, and then when you want to do a search, you go to your Raspberry Pi IP address, and you basically type in your search engine. AKA, all of the work to do the search engine is isolated on that Raspberry Pi, so it does not affect your computer's performance at all. Because with the normal install of YACI, one, it takes literally like 20 seconds for it to start up, and two, it literally takes processor cycles off of your HTML page rendering, and it literally takes up processor cycles when somebody else does a search on the network. So to push it off to a Raspberry Pi, to me, this is the perfect combination of a computer that is like a appliance and software to help keep you in a distributed fashion off of corporations' computers.
Very good point.
Yeah, so I found a use for my Raspberry Pi 2 here. I haven't been using it for anything else.
Well, it's always so many of us. And I know you guys, I know everybody here is guilty of it. Don't even try to lie. We all have that one thing like that we bought, or have that half-started project, or you have that laptop that's just sitting there doing nothing, or that old beige box. Do yourself a favor. Get rid of it. You know, take it to your local recycle center, donate it, whatever, or do something with it. There is so much. I mean, I'm probably not the best example of this because I have all so much stuff everywhere. I could run quite the operation here if I really wanted to. But look for opportunities to use your tech that you're not using right now, or put it in the hands of someone else who can.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely looks cool. I'm going to have to try to find some time to set this thing up because I need to set it up kind of thing. To me, this is the kind of thing I would like to show my kid how this kind of stuff works.
Yeah, well, it sounds good.
Okay, another link from opensource.com, again, a Red Hat sponsored website. And I didn't honestly know this ahead of time. I just saw 8 accessible Linux distributions to try immediately bookmarked. Okay. More accessibility is good, period. Yes, we like Sonar. Yes, we push Sonar, but Sonar is not the only thing out there. And this is by Kendall Clark. And as soon as I saw that, I just thought for a split second, I think I've seen that name before. But I just figured I saw it on opensource.com in the past. Then I scroll down and it's installing Linux, downloading the distro, burning it, booting to the image. So it tells you how to do that kind of stuff. First distro it talks about is Vinix. And then it talks about Sonar. And it does say, Sonar is my favorite disability-specific Linux distro. I'm also a code developer for it. So that's why I noticed the name. I noticed it in emails about Sonar. And it goes over... Basically, those are the two that are ridiculously focused for accessibility. Everything else can help with accessibility. Fedora, Ubuntu Mate, Triskel, text-based distros, Talking Arch, Debian, stuff like that. So this is a great audio about the introduction of accessibility and what kind of path you can take. So I definitely encourage people to check this out. I will say I was kind of miffed at FalseCon, okay? And I'm not really calling anybody out, but I just wanted to state facts as I saw them. Okay, Eric S. Raymond, The Cathedral and the Bazaar. Guy's been in open source forever. He's definitely getting up in age, and he's definitely went for some time without proper health insurance is what it appears to me. He can't walk normal. There's something wrong with his ankle. And when he walked in the room to do his AMA, he literally fell flat on his face because of his ankle. And then 80% of the way through his talk, somebody asked him about accessibility. And he just basically kind of like shrugged his shoulder like, I don't have anything to say about accessibility. And I was literally like floored. Like, but you obviously need some accessibility. And he had... In my personal opinion, better things going on in his head than to deal about this. So as soon as his talk was over, the girl was a younger girl who said she has to work with people who need accessibility. Me and Russ and Murph. Murph was the other guy I saw in FalseCon, which I should have known I was going to see him. We basically informed her about the HDF, Sonar, things you can do. And I begged her. I said, look, I'm a dork and I'm nerdy and I might look a little creepy. But if you need anything in the realm of accessibility, and I pointed to my shirt, just go to Podnuts and hit contact. I know people who are involved in this passionately, so they can definitely help you out if you need any tips with accessibility, more accessibility, teaching accessibility, the software that can be used and the hardware that can be used kind of thing. Because the bottom line is, this only is going to impact more and more people as time goes on. I'm going to quote Chris Rock, who says, today's medicine is, if you can't walk, they give you a wheelchair. If you can't see, they give you a dog. We're not great about fixing a lot of things in health these days. It just seems like we're giving you stuff to cope.
That's right. Yeah, to also quote another comedian, Louis C.K., had something in his act, and it was also something on his show, Louis, whereas beyond the age of 40, doctors aren't giving you ways to fix stuff. They're just making you, or they're just helping you cope with the fact that it's broken and it's never going to work again.
Yeah. And I'm past 40. So yes, I agree. Okay. Two more links with actually three more topics to them. First link is over at lennox-netbook.com/compare/Chromebooks. I don't know how up to date this is. That's the only thing I cannot tell. But what I can tell you is this is a phenomenal structured list, sortable and searchable on basically every Chromebook. You can sort and search by the name, the release date, the CPU model number, the clock rate, the CPU cores, the amount of RAM, screen size, maximum resolution, touch screen, battery life, weight, or how much internal storage it has. If you're thinking about getting a Chromebook, I cannot encourage you enough. Check out this site to do some comparison looking, and I guarantee you, you're going to at least have your eyes opened. It might be a confirmation bias of, yes, I was looking at the right book, or I didn't know about this book. Maybe I should look at this one.
That's a very good point.
And I will say, if you click on one of the books, and then if you do click on buy on Amazon, yes, of course, it's using their Amazon affiliate code. That's how they make money. So be aware that when you do click through, you will be using their affiliate code. I'm not sure they make it obvious on their website that's what's happening, but that's what's happening.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, and all this will be, of course, be in the notes.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, last one here. It's actually two links. EnhanceSoft.com. They have two products on their website. Both of them, okay, one of them is positively GPL'd. The other one looks like it is. I can't get confirmation on it. Okay, OS Ticket. OS Ticket is a support ticketing system. There's plenty of stuff out there, whether it's FreshBooks or PC Repair Shop or whatever it's called. There's a whole bunch of them out there.
This PC Repair Tracker.
Yeah, PC Repair Tracker. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is GPL software, which means you can download it. You can install it yourself. There are also people who are offering this as a service where you pay for them to host the content and stuff. But if you want to, you can literally download this yourself, self-hosted, completely free, or you can, through their support system. Their support system is the one that cost money. Gotcha. Okay. So support system is another layer on top of OS Ticket. Okay.
Okay.
Right. I cannot encourage people enough. If you're looking at doing some kind of ticketing system for especially computer repair or any type of technical type job, you need to check out OS Ticket. Completely free. You can download it. You can set it up yourself in your own box, and away you go. You can't beat free is what I'm going to say. You just can't beat free. This is really cool of them to offer this. And I love the fact that they offer it as a free download. And then if you want, you can pay them to host it. So if you want to give back to them and have access to this system, there you go. Best of both worlds.
Yeah. And if you're tech right now, or if you're going to be one soon, definitely look into a ticket system, because one of the things you should be relying on as an entrepreneur, especially running a business like that, is return customers for a number of reasons. But being able to just keep information on what you have done to a particular system or for a particular person, is not only going to save them time, but save you time in a number of ways. So everybody that I know that has run an independent business speaks very, very highly of ticketing systems, especially Tracy Holster. Cannot speak highly enough of it. So definitely look into this because it looks like up front it's free, but there are some paid add-ons.
Yeah, and I will say it's the kind of thing everyone starting out always wants to complain about money and cost. This is a cost-free way to at least get into the idea of a ticketing system. You want to know if you worked on a computer, when you worked on a computer, what you did to that computer, when you did it to that computer, why you did it to that computer, just in case somebody comes back and says, this isn't working now. You can at least cover your own work kind of thing to make sure. And it is nice to have a system where you can basically query all the customers and send out emails, either thanking them for coming to your shop or offering them discounted services or promotional services kind of thing. As Alton Brown, the cook on the Food Network, said, and I firmly believe in, organization will set you free. So you got to do it.
Testify, brother. Very good. All right. Well, that seems to be the remainder of our articles. So, as always, hey, Dor, where can we find you online?
The easiest place, of course, is justpodnotes.com. Hit the contact button. You will send an email to mail@podnotes.com that way. You can catch me on Facebook, unfortunately, or on Twitter, kind of. I guess I'm there, too. Or on Google+. And I will put it like this. I think I said this. Google+ seems to be the most natural social interactions on the internet. Twitter seems like I'm standing in a cubbyhole and somebody needs to come to talk to me in order for me to have a conversation. Because it's every time I stick my head out of the cubbyhole, there's so much garbage flying by that doesn't relate to anything I'm thinking or talking about. There's nothing there for me to interact with unless I want to troll somebody over their vegetable-based bacon or something. and on Facebook, there's clearly too much interpersonal, quote-unquote, mushy stuff that I just can't stand, or just too many grandparents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely pros and cons. But thank you for that, Dor. If you guys want to hit me up, please touch base with me on Google+. Probably the best way. Just search me, Cody Cooper. Or you can hit me up on Twitter, @CodyCooper. And let's see. Let's make this fun. If you agree or disagree with Dor's views of Twitter, just send me a comment on Twitter with the hashtag DorsAnOldMan.
Yeah, good. I won't see it.
Yeah, of course you won't.
I have my filter on.
That's right. Yeah. That doesn't exist. So, all right. More importantly, though, once again, thank you very much, everybody, who's been using our podnuts.com/Amazon link. Your number one, definitely top three ways of supporting the show. If you're making purchases on Amazon.com and you want to help out the show, just use the link podnuts.com/Amazon. That way, the interface for Amazon is exactly the same as it would be if you didn't use it. And a portion of your purchases goes into helping us with all the operations of the show, which is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. If you want to contribute some content to the show, please send an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com or call in a voicemail to 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Keep it to around 60 seconds. If it goes a little bit long, no problem. If it's beyond 2 minutes, break it up into a couple voicemails. We'll be happy to play them both. And thank you very much for everybody who has been sending in some content. I know I've been saying this for far too long, but we do have a back catalog of correspondence that we will address in one fell swoop in a show coming up soon. Speaking of coming up soon, I won't be here next week, Dor. What are you going to do without me?
Sleep.
Okay. We may not have a show next week because Dor will be a deadbeat. I, however, will be in Vegas. And as awful as that sounds, I'm just going to be a professional and try to trudge my way through it.
Have faith, Cody. Have faith. I think you can do it.
Okay, cool. I'll bring you back, guys. I'll bring you guys back some stories. So, yeah. Well,
What happened in Vegas?
Oh, pardon me. But I can give vague generalities to give you guys a gist.
Oh, okay.
All right. For instance, I can go one time in Omaha. Wink, wink. Yeah, see? Yeah. Although you might understand based on the message that I was in Vegas. But that's not here nor there. Okay, cool. Well, hey, everybody, thank you very, very much again for listening, giving us the kudos and correspondence you have. I can't wait to read some more stuff from you guys. Can't wait to see what the future holds for this show and for all of Podnets. Some good updates coming soon, by the way. But more importantly, please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.